On this episode of Know How, we're all about the Raspberry Pi, a little bit of a hack with a time-lapse camera, and yeah, it's cryptocurrency.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Welcome to Know How. This is the show where we build, break, bend, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to break down a few geek projects and give you the knowledge to, well, do all this stuff. Now, Brian.
Yeah?
You're in the Doge, right?
I'd say so.
You're Doge-tastic?
Big Doge.
Doge-tacular?
Sure.
Doge-miters.
Okay, you've gone too far.
Okay, now. All right, now, we know that Doge is an alt currency, right? It's a cryptocurrency, and we did a little bit of an explanation about this on a previous episode of Know How, but do you want to give the folks a quick primer, a reminder of what it means to mine cryptocurrency?
Doge specifically?
Yeah, Doge. Let's talk about Doge.
I feel like Doge is a cryptocurrency for fun, more so than, like, Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Where, actually, Bitcoin's at the point now where you need industrial strength hardware to even make one.
You need those specifically designed ASICs, those pieces of silicone that do nothing but the number crunching for the hashing that's required for cryptocurrency.
And that's why Doge was great, because you could use mostly anything to make it, but now it's gotten so much harder to do even now.
Right.
It's only been a few weeks.
Yeah. And one of the weaknesses of all cryptocurrencies has been that fact that it starts off easy, right? The difficulty rating is pretty low. It's easy for you to mine, and then slowly it ramps up as more blocks are uncovered, as more rewards are given out, Doge or Litecoin or Bitcoin becomes increasingly more difficult to get. Now, we're not going to be talking about that. Yeah. What I want to talk about is, do you know what happens to all that hashing, all that much mining when you're done?
All that work that these computers are doing, all that power that they're absorbing and wasting?
Yep. That's a very good term. It's wasted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that cryptocurrency is awarded is they've got a blockchain that can be unlocked when your computer, your GPU, your system, whatever it is, unlocks certain cryptographic hashes.
Right.
Well, once those are unlocked, those hashes are good for nothing, right? So they're just tossed away. It's just a way to unlock the reward. Mm-hmm. And there have been a lot of people, in fact, some people in our chat room and our G Plus community who have said, wait a minute, Padre, couldn't you use that computing power for good? Why do you just have to throw away the cryptographic hashes? Couldn't you turn something like a Dogecoin into a force for much good?
Yeah, but what would you do for that?
Well, how about this? There are a few projects that we've run throughout the history of distributed computing. Things like, have you ever heard of SETI at home?
I have heard of SETI.
Yeah, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Right. Folding at home.
Folding at home, right. Both of those used a lot of computing power to figure out a complex real-world problem. In the case of SETI, they were looking for a signature for a signal that would indicate that there's some sort of extraterrestrial life.
Yeah.
In the case of folding, they were looking at folding proteins, which is, it's actually a mathematical problem. So if you get enough computing power, you could figure out the folding of those proteins, which allows you to do things like, solve diseases.
Which is pretty cool. Now, what if you could bring those things together and not have that wasted energy?
Exactly. So that's what we're starting to see in some of these altcoins. We've got a few coins that have been developed recently. The one that I really like is called the ReCoin. Have you heard about that?
RIE coin.
Yeah.
I have heard about that. Now, this coin is different because it solves for prime numbers.
Exactly, right. So it's named after Bernard Riemann, who was a mathematician who studied the distribution of prime numbers. And anyone who's a mathematician understands how important prime numbers are, right? It's the number that's only divisible by itself and by one. Well, you know, the first couple of prime numbers are easy to figure out.
Right.
1, 3, 5, 7.
Then as you start
11,
to get
it
out,
it gets
there.
Further and further out.
Yeah.
So this new ReCoin actually uses the power of those distributed computers to figure out the next prime.
Cool.
Yeah. So I like this for a number of reasons. One, because it's just geeky, right? I mean, math is awesome. Science is awesome.
Yeah.
Who knows? Prime numbers could lead us to 42.
Something. Yeah, the exactly. answer to the universe.
The life and everything.
Life, everything, yeah.
But here's the other thing. One of the issues that people have had with altcoins, with cryptocurrency, is they think, oh, well, you're just trying to make money out of nothing. Well, what if the work that went into making that cryptocurrency was actually for
valuable.
Something?
Yeah. yeah. Right? Instead of just heating my room at home you know, with my computer running all day.
Well, Recoin's not the only cryptocurrency that had this idea, right? You came
right.
up with one?
There's another one with an even simpler name, Primecoin. Same yep. thing. It's solving for prime numbers and coming up with a hash chain.
Hash chain, yeah. yeah. Now, I'm hoping that this becomes a trend because when you think about how much power goes into much mining, you know, big Doge,
that's what I like to imagine is happening inside my computer.
This just makes me happy.
There's
right?
little doges in there mining away.
I made a 10-hour loop of that, and it runs in a monitor in my lab.
Does not surprise me.
It's bad. I'm sorry. I have a problem.
but you were saying?
Yeah. No, but if we could get more of the cryptocurrency to do that, to use that hash power for good, yeah. well, then I think more people would get behind it.
Well, especially for Dogecoin because it's not very valuable.
No.
You're doing it for fun.
What's the rate right now?
It's like 0.0012. I think Alex has it up on the monitor here. Where
oh,
is it?
No.
Yeah, 0.0012.
Yeah, but it's up.
That's a bubble. Actually, according to that, because I have 1 million Doge, I got a little bit of cash there.
So it is up, but the amount of Dogecoin that I have in my wallet does not come anywhere near to the amount of money that I've probably spent on electricity. And it's not worth me doing it at work anymore. I definitely don't do that. So
save it for your retirement.
Wait, don't you mean it's not even close to the amount of electricity that Leo has spent?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't been stealing any BYB laptops in a while. So
All right. Let's put away the Doge and let's get to our first
cool.
project. Now, one of the things we've heard from you about is that you want more Raspberry Pi, and who wouldn't want it? I mean, low-cost computer. This is what?
It's cool.
$40, right?
For the 512 megabyte.
For the 512 megabyte. And there have been so many innovative things that people have done with a Raspberry Pi. We've seen them put into clusters. We used it to make a camera server, a surveillance server. I know other people who use them as sort of the home automation node, a little computer that can tell the temperature and mm-hmm. humidity or sound, someone breaking into your house. But we had a request specifically to turn one of these things into a web server. Now, you want to know how we did this?
Sure. Are you going to show me?
Yeah, I think we are. But first, we got to show you what you're going to need. It's a really simple set of hardware. If Alex could bring up our product shot here, you need two USB devices, the USB right. keyboard and the USB mouse.
Interface with the Pi.
Just yeah. interface with the Raspberry Pi. You're going to need a SD card. I prefer the 16 gigabyte one, 16 gigabytes and above, just because I like a little bit of space.
Are you using most of that space?
I actually do, because I load them up with files that I can pull off the Pi.
Okay.
But, I mean, I know you like use 4 gigabytes, right?
I think for my main project, I use an 8, and I've used maybe 6 gigs
yeah,
on it, tops.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I like a little bit more storage, and it's so cheap, why not?
Yeah.
You're also going to need a couple of cables. You need an HDMI cable and, of course, a monitor that will support HDMI because this only has HDMI out. You're going to need an Ethernet cable and an active Ethernet jack, something that's actually connected to the Internet. And finally, you're going to need a little bit of power because you got to turn the thing on.
Right.
Now, Brian, there is one super secret piece of gear that you're going to need for your new Raspberry Pi rig.
Super secret?
Super secret, yeah.
Well, I don't even know what that is.
It's an Angry Bird.
I don't think
The first step is to download a few files. Go to raspberrypi.org and click on the Download tab. Get the latest copy of the SD Formatter tool and the latest stable release of Noobs, the new out-of-box software install. Install the SD Formatter software, then use it to prepare your SD card, making sure to check the option to allow it to do a format size adjustment. Copy the contents of the Noobs folder into the root directory of the newly formatted SD card, then plug the SD card into your Raspberry Pi. Connect the mouse and keyboard into the USB ports on the Raspberry Pi, connect the HDMI port to your monitor, and the Ethernet port to your network. Finally, connect the power cable from the Raspberry Pi into your USB power source. After the Raspi boots, you can see a screen that lets you choose your distro. Select Raspbian and click Install. The install will take about 15 minutes. Use this time to gauge your progress with the Angry Bird. See the bird. Be the bird. glance into the bird's eyes and know why it's so angry. Once the install is finished, click OK, and the Pi will reboot into the configuration tool. While you're here, make sure to change the default password by selecting option 2. Your username is now Pi, and your password is whatever you choose. Next, go into option 4 and select your time zone, then go back to the main menu and select Finish and hit Enter. You should now be at the Raspbian command prompt. You need to update the list of packages available to Raspbian. Install Apache, MySQL, PHP 5 Pair, and PHP MyAdmin before you set the Apache configuration. To update the available packages, type sudo space apt-get space update. To install Apache, type sudo space apt-get space install space Apache 2. To install MySQL, type sudo space apt-get space install space MySQL dash server. In the middle of this installation, you'll be asked to change the root password for the MySQL database. To install PHP 5 and pair, type sudo space apt-get space install space PHP 5 space PHP-pair space PHP5-MySQL. Then type sudo space service space Apache 2 space restart. The last installation is of PHP MyAdmin. This is the package that will allow you to control your server. Type sudo space apt-get space install space PHP MyAdmin. Now it will ask you halfway through the installation which web server you want to use. Select Apache and then select OK. It will also ask you to confirm that you want to use the MySQL database installation that you just completed. Give it the password that you selected and continue. Lastly, it will ask you what password you want to use for the PHP MyAdmin page. Go ahead and give it your password. With this first part of the installation done, it's now time to alter the server configuration. Type sudo space nano space slash etsy slash apache2 slash apache2.conf. You need to add the line include space slash etsy slash php myadmin slash apache.conf. Go ahead and exit the editor by typing control and x and confirming that you want to save the file. Now restart the server with all the changes by typing sudo space service space Apache 2 space restart. Now, let's test it. Find your IP address. Type ifconfig and you'll see an IP address in Ethernet 0. Type that address into your browser of choice and you'll reach a web page telling you that your new web server is up and running. Now appending slash phpMyAdmin slash to the IP address will get you into the PHP administration page where you can see the status of your web server and set permissions to your newly installed services. Now your web server is working, but unless you have access to the files that the web server displays, it's not all that useful. To make it useful, we need to install an FTP server. First, we need to take ownership of the web root by typing sudo space chown space dash r space pi space slash var slash www. Next, we need to install the vsftpd package by typing sudo space apt-get space install space vsftpd. Once that has installed, edit the vsftpd configuration file by typing sudo space nano space slash etsy slash vsftpd.conf. You need to make four changes to this configuration file. First, change anonymous underscore enable equals yes to anonymous underscore enable equals no. Next, remove the comment, that's the pound sign, from both local underscore enable equals yes and write underscore enable equals yes. Finally, go to the bottom of the file and add the line force underscore dot underscore files equals yes. Hit Control and X to save and confirm the exit. Now start the FTP server by typing sudo space service space vsftpd space restart. Finally, we're going to create a shortcut so that every time you log into the FTP server, it will drop you into the web server root. Type ln-s space slash var /www/space/www. Now you can use a FTP client to navigate to your server and change files to properly load up your web server. Now, I understand that that's a lot. In the chat room, some people say, oh, my head's spinning.
My mind is melting. Yeah.
But there's this wonderful new thing that we've created. What was it called, Brian?
I think it's a pause and rewind button.
Pause and rewind. Now, we understand that this is a lot of data to assimilate, which is why all of these instructions are step by step in the show notes. In fact, they're already up there as soon as my producer publishes them.
Edit it, and then put it up on the website, it'll be good to go.
It'll be all there. So what you need to do when you're watching this video is don't pay attention to the directions. I leave them in there because there will be people who pause it and move on as they get each step done. But rather, try to assimilate the flow. This is how you pretty much do every Raspberry Pi project you're ever going to do. There's the installation of the operating system, initial configuration, and then you get the packages for whatever project you're doing. So that's what we really want you to figure out, because you've got a lot of ideas for Raspberry Pi projects, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. And the only way you can really follow along is if you pause and read. Yeah. We will have it in the show notes. Yeah. So we were talking about how you don't have to read out slash, I think, next time, because people are just going to have to look at the show notes and copy them down or something.
We were actually talking to each other during the playing of the video, and I was saying, you know what, halfway through I should have just said, you know what, forget
this. I'm tired.
Listeners, I'm sorry. I'm tired of reading this out. Just go to the show notes.
TLDR.
TLDR. But again, it's a very interesting project that could be done on a very interesting platform. Right. That entire kit was about $60. That included the Pi, that included the memory card, that included the USB keyboard and mouse, and
we were
the
talking
tables.
About how cryptocurrency wasted energy and everything. A Raspberry Pi web server?
It's ridiculously low energy. Right. Yeah. You can run it off the USB port on your computer.
You could have a little solar panel hooked up to like a battery or something.
I've actually seen that. Now, here's one thing, though. It is an incredibly low-powered device. So if you think that you're going to open this up behind your firewall, you know, drive a port into it, and make it your public server, it will work fine as long as it's just you, maybe a couple of friends hitting it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have the resources to take, like, hundreds or even thousands of hits. So just know that. This is a great development machine. Yeah. You can run MySQL PHP so you could test to see if your website's going to work before you upload it to something serious.
Yeah, just a fun project. And like you said, very small price to get into it, $60 maybe.
Yeah. And just remember, be the angry bird.
Get that out of here.
Sorry about that. Now, I understand that you've got a little something for us. You wanted to show us a device for time lapsing.
Right. Well, a few episodes ago, I think it was episode 76, I showed the folks how to make a time lapse just using your GoPro. But I wanted to, you know, expand on that. In a cost-effective method.
Right.
Because the GoPro itself is actually pretty expensive, but it has a lot of features, and I love playing with them anyway. You might have noticed there's something set up behind you.
Yeah,
right now.
I hear something ticking. I'm like, does he hate me? Is he going to blow up?
No, it should be fine.
Oh, okay. I've seen these before. Now, this is a different kind of time-lapse. So the time-lapse that we've seen before have been a static camera that looks out over a scene and records a lot of time in a very small amount of a video.
Right.
Now, that's cool, but this kind of time-lapse camera actually moves the camera.
Yeah, it puts a little bit of motion into the video, and that makes the time-lapse a little bit more exciting, you know? So I made a quick video to show you how to do that. But before we get to that, can you do the overhead, Al? So at KnowHow, we break things so you don't have to. When I first got the timer, I did not realize you could take the screws out from the bottom.
So are those parts supposed to be like that?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I lost some in between.
You know, I think the problem is that these are curvy. You need to straighten these.
One thing I realized is I'm never going to be a clockmaker, because as soon as I pulled this off, I just gave up.
And this is because you didn't call Padre, because Padre could have told you they had to take off the top. Right?
I don't need Padre for everything.
Okay. All right.
Fortunately, though, Tony's fiance, I believe, went down to IKEA the very next day and bought me two more of these. And if you go into the store, they're only $6.
Right.
Pretty basic egg timer. And fortunately, if you don't know how to use an egg timer, IKEA supplies instructions in every language. So if you're kind of confused on how to use it, don't worry. If you don't speak English, don't worry. It's Tons of instructions.
Yeah. Let's take a look.
Yeah, let's watch the video.
To begin this project, you're going to need a timer from IKEA. This little guy, the ordening timer from IKEA runs about $6 in the store. If you order it on Amazon, it's $12, so go in store if you can. The next part you'll be needing is a 3/8 inch to 1/4 inch grommet. Now, here at KnowHow, we dedicate ourselves to breaking things so you don't have to. I took apart this first timer and, well, it didn't turn out so good. I'm not going to be able to put that back together for sure. But anyway, we'll use it as a test bench for our unruined timer. So the first thing is I'm going to use this iFixit kit to pull off some of this adhesive foam on the bottom. And it'll reveal 3 screws, which you can easily remove and then pull off the bottom plate. That'll leave the plastic bottom exposed and only 1 screw left to take out to completely take off from the rest of the timer. Now this way I can drill through the timer without damaging any parts. I'm going to do some quick measurements and use a marker to make sure that I have this hole centered. Next, I went down to the Twit basement and used the drill press with a 5/16 drill to make my hole. It was just a little bit smaller than what I need for the grommet, so I also used a different bit to kind of widen the hole a little bit, and then I was able to slip the grommet in just fine. Use a flathead screwdriver to get it in the rest of the way. It was a little off-center when I had it screwed in, so I just tapped it a few times with a hammer to make sure it sat flush against the bottom of the plate. Next, I put the screws back in to hold the bottom plate to the timer, and voila, we have a little grommet that we can now use to mount to a plate for a tripod. Now, to attach the GoPro, you're just going to use a little sticky mount that a lot of GoPros come with as accessories. So having the tripod up high in the studio during TNT, I was able to get this 13-second clip by using 2-second picture mode on the GoPro. And as with any time lapse, watch out for photo bombers, especially Jason Howell. He has a tendency to want to be in front of the camera a lot.
Now, what I love about that is this is cheap. This is a crazy cheap project.
Yeah, $6 from IKEA, $12 on Amazon, and super easy to set up, and it turned out pretty well.
Yeah, and those little grommets we actually found on Amazon for like $10 for $1. So, yeah, get yourself a couple. And it's actually surprisingly good quality. It gives you a really nice pan across whatever scene.
Yeah, and, you know, when we first were going to do this project, we thought, well, you know, why stop at a GoPro? Why not do a DSLR or something?
We tried.
It's a little too much for poor little guy. But a GoPro is just the right amount of weight, and set it to 2 seconds, and you get, like, that smooth, just 360 pan. Set it for an hour.
We actually tried very early on. We tried putting just a standard, like, one of those JVC camcorders, the prosumer quarters on it.
No,
and it was really sad because you heard tick, 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 tick. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's a little too heavy. Now, the other idea we had was putting a grommet on the bottom and on the top so that you could, say, mount it underneath like an eave.
Yeah.
And if it was upside down, this might be able to support the weight, but...
Right. Yeah. And, you know, as I took apart this timer... There's not a lot of space on the top to drill down.
Yeah.
So, and you if you're really going to drill through it, you're going to have to take it off. And when you do that,
boing.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a future episode of Know How, maybe we can show them how to reassemble this.
Yeah. Everybody's clamoring to know how to put back their timers after that episode.
Yeah, this is so gone. Yeah. But yeah, drop by IKEA for the egg timer because it will be $6 there. It's $12 on Amazon.
Yeah.
Get the grommet and hopefully you've got all the drilling equipment that you need at home in order to be able to do this. It is a very cool project.
So Chickenhead 21 in the chat room just had a great idea too. Use a Raspberry Pi with a camera adapter.
That's actually a future project. Yeah, what we've got is we're creating. Oh, should I tell them this? Yeah, let's tell them.
Yeah,
this.
Go ahead.
We are creating a board that runs a screw via a Raspberry Pi so that it will move the time-lapse camera this way. So rather than a circular pan, it's a linear pan. Very cool. Again, it's one of these things that you can do for relatively low cost that give you a big wow factor if you're making content.
Yeah. I like putting videos together with time lapses, so we'll do more of them.
Yeah. Now, what do we have next week? I think next week we're talking a little bit about dancing lights, right? I've got a little project that uses a TIP31C transistor.
Something that's sound controlled?
Sound controlled. Okay. Yeah, I call it dancing lights. It sounds much better.
You like your dancing lights?
I like dancing lights. Yeah. What are you working on?
I will be working on a Linux bootable USB.
Nice.
So you can take your OS wherever you want.
Yeah. How about that? But until then, the first thing we got to tell you is we know that these projects can be a little bit daunting. They're kind of confusing because we go through them quickly because we can't do everything in real time. But you can always find everything we do in great detail in our show notes. We actually give you the step-by-step play, which is important when we do something like the Raspberry Pi. Brian, where can they find our show notes?
Well, you can find that at twit.tv/KH, and that's where all our show notes, episodes, subscribe links live. But if you're not content with that, there's more. You can email us at knowhow@twit.tv if you have any questions, ideas for shows, or even better, you could go to a community that has almost 6,000.
That's right. We've got our Google Plus community at gplus.to/twitkh. Mm-hmm. Now, the nice thing about this community is, again, it's almost 6,000. It's growing each and every single week. And people actually help one another. At the beginning, it used to be the host would jump in and start discussions. There have been discussions in there that have started and concluded without any interaction from us. So you get a lot of smart people who like hacking things together. It's a nice place to be. Yeah. And, it's kind of polite.
It is, oddly enough.
Strangely polite.
Keep it up, guys.
How about that? You can also find us on other bits of social media if you don't like G+. You could most easily reach me at Twitter, at twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's at PadreSJ.
And you can find me on Twitter at cranky_hippo. And there's a story behind that I'm not going to get into today, but that's where you can follow me on Twitter. And I'd like to say thank you to our, for now, temporary TD, Alex Gumpel.
Yeah. Actually, you may have noticed he was normally the TD for Know How, and our new TD has done an extraordinary job. Alex, can you take a bow for a second here? He's known as the flow mat. Actually, he won't.
You can't see it, but he's bowing.
I can't bow.
He can't. He won't do it. Well, we're going to get him eventually. He's shy, but Alex is the flow master for the Twit Brick House, and we are happy to have him aboard the team.
Cool.
You think maybe that's it?
That's it. Well, now the audience should know how.